And joining me at the party table, former city councilor, TTC chair, now the president and CEO of Variety Village, Karen Stintz. Good morning.
Good morning, Jerry. How are
How long has it been since you were a councilor?
It has been 8 years.
Are you fully recovered?
Yes, I am. I am.
Okay.
It took a while.
It took a while.
Yeah. But I am. I'm a recovered politician. Yes.
All right. Well, then you could look at this with first of all your expertise of having been there, but also maybe some years as a citizen. $6 million budget savings offered by Toronto Mayor an insult, according to Gord Perks and some of the lefty councillors. Although they call it a budget savings, but one of my listeners, Karen, pointed out if all they do is spend it on something else, it's just a reallocation of the dollars. It's not a saving. Does anybody over at City Hall get the concept of trying to right-size a government?
No. Honestly, and I have to tell you that my experience of the city, it's only become more frustrating in that they, to your point, it's not a savings. And they absolutely should not reallocate it, because how can they possibly come out and say, well, we need to have the 7% tax increase because we can't make ends meet. Oh, and all of a sudden we just found this, I mean, it's a paltry amount, but nonetheless. Then go cap in hand to other levels of government and say, we can't balance our books, all the while delivering absolutely miserable service to the citizens that it's supposed to be serving. It's absolutely outrageous.
All right. But Gord Perks has popped up in the news twice this week. He is worried about the amount of money we're going to be spending on cops on the TTC. And now he's worried about whether or not we found enough savings in government. And was your experience of Gord Perks when you were there, Karen Stintz, that he was a budget hawk?
Well, he certainly understood where to find money in the budget for his pet projects. I'll give him that much credit. But no, he's certainly not anyone I would refer to as a fiscal hawk.
All right. I've been increasingly actually critical of where we are with budgets and increasing taxes. And in fact, last week or so, I actually started an editorial at the beginning of my show by saying, warning, this is going to be bitter and angry, because I've just lost it in terms of I can't find people in government who really get their heads around the idea that government has to do once in a while what the private sector has to do once in a while, what you probably have to do as the CEO of Variety Village. This is the money we've got, and we need to seriously look at our budget here.
100%. And it's that whole notion. And it's not even that the city is fiscally, bordering on unsustainability. It's its level of apathy around the service it delivers, value for money, budget. It's a whole culture of apathy that's infected the city that is really and truly remarkable, in that nobody cares. Nobody returns phone calls. Projects don't get finished. Water taps don't get turned on. It's just remarkable how bad the city is at managing its business.
Are you sure you thought that way when you were there?
I just didn't experience it in the same way. And maybe, I don't know, maybe it's changed, maybe it hasn't. That I can't speak to, because before I had what I thought was an in. But as a citizen, it is unbelievably frustrating to be dealing with a monolithic bureaucracy that just doesn't care.
And speaking of bureaucracy, which they shovel over to the citizens whenever they can, today is the deadline for Toronto homeowners to declare whether or not their residential properties are vacant. Letters went out to all Toronto homeowners on this. The move comes as Toronto implements an annual tax on vacant residences with the aim of making sure that homes are not sitting empty and a shortage of supply. I get the concern, don't like the so-called solution. This is an attack on private property rights, which aren't sufficiently recognized and respected in Canada, as far as I'm concerned, from the get-go. Fines for failing to declare or making a false declaration can range from $250 all the way up to $10,000. How do you look at this?
Well, it's ridiculous, too, because I actually did fill out my survey, and all it said was, do you promise that you actually live in your home? The extent of the declaration. I'm like, yeah, I promise.
Okay.
Me and everybody else who is filling it out, to your point, I'm like, yeah, you know what? Define living in my home, right? Like, all I have to do is show up once every 6 months and that qualifies. So this whole idea that this is going to be a revenue stream for the city is lunacy, first and foremost. Second of all, you know what? To your point, if I buy a property, how I choose to use it is frankly no one else's business but mine. And thirdly, the only people that are going to get fined under this is the seniors and those who aren't maybe as literate to fill out the required information who end up getting a fine for not submitting, and they never even knew what the requirement was because it never occurred to them that they had to declare they lived in their house.
Well, yeah, I think what it's aimed at is people who own more than one and people who may own many, and some of them are sitting empty and they want to put a tax on that. But I'm not so sure that that would work anyway, because unless the tax gets draconian, there's a reason somebody is not renting the house out, and they might just say, look, if I wanted the income from the thing, I'd rent it out, and otherwise I'll just pay your stupid fine.
Correct.
All right.
Yeah. And then again, how many ways can you tax it? If it's a second, third, or fourth property, then there's a capital gains tax when you sell it. So, you know, like, at what point do we just say, okay, this is something that we can't control. It's not perfect for when we're trying to get housing solutions for people, but let's actually focus on a solution that's going to work.
So I was talking to medical ethicist Carrie Bowman a little earlier on this story. It's a proposed bill in Massachusetts, and the short version is that a prisoner in Massachusetts could get a minimum of 60 days or up to a year taken off their sentence. They would be released earlier if they will donate a kidney. By the way, we podcast the entire show, so if you missed a good conversation with medical ethicist Carrie Bowman, that'll be on the podcast later this afternoon. But Karen Stintz, how do you look at this?
Yeah, no, I think that if you're going to donate an organ, it really should be unconditional, and there shouldn't be any benefit attached to that, whether you're in prison or you're not in prison. And so I kind of think that that's a little bit awkward.
I get why people don't like it. I'm not going to necessarily fight with people, but I will say I hope that anybody who's against this will go to beadonor.ca and sign up, because we wouldn't, Massachusetts or anybody else wouldn't have to make an offer like this to prisoners if there were enough organs available, and they're just never are. And, you know, here's where I would be uncomfortable, Karen, and that is that if you come to me and you say, look, I'm going to die if I don't get a kidney in the next 9 months, and I know we can get one through the prison system, and I say, I'm too virtuous to let that happen, Karen, you're going to have to die.
Yeah. But I know, I think that, you know, having an organ donor in the prison system is not the issue. I think it's the notion of benefiting. Right. And so if I went to you, Jerry, and said, listen, I'm going to die in 9 months. Can I pay you to give me your kidney?
What do you got?
I don't think that's OK either.
What do you got? Can I have the house you're not living in?
That's right. Sorry, John Troy took everything I had.
Okay, I'll take that answer. Some Ontario boards planning to keep virtual learning, even if the province doesn't require it. I don't know, like, just off the top, unless somebody explains to me why I'm wrong, and it could well be here. I just think that any kinds of options that we have should probably not be taken off the table just to take them off the table.
Yeah, if you know what, if virtual learning works for some kids, I mean, it's not a COVID matter anymore. It's just a matter of pragmatics. And if it can work for the school board and it can work for the students, then I'm with you, Jerry. Like, let's go with what works.
Yeah, it's very much like what would happen in, and I think is happening, in the workplace. We're now back to coming into the radio station to do the job, but all that equipment that I built up over COVID, which is pretty much everything I need now, they said, don't bring it back. Keep it at home. When we had a big storm that was predicted the other day, I got up early to look out the window to see whether or not I was going to fight the storm or whether I was going to work from home. And I absolutely have the opportunity to make that choice. And so having those things on the table, it's always good.
Absolutely. I agree.
All right. How's everything? How's everything at Variety Village?
Everything's really good.
Yeah?
Yeah. We're doing well. The kids are doing great.
That's it. That's the report.
That's the report from Variety Village.
Well, at least you were succinct.
Yeah. Well, you know what? And I'm glad they're back, though, because there's some things with kids with a disability you can't do virtually. So for us, it's good that we're able to do things back in person.
All right. Karen Stintz, a former city councilor and TTC chair. She is now president and CEO of Variety Village. Thanks very much. Good to have you along.
Thanks, Jerry. Always good.
Yep. Now, I have said this whole bail thing that we talk about and turning violent people back out onto the street, and it's not the fault of the police. Turns out, occasionally it is. So it's only fair to talk about that coming up on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.